Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
One more week. Good morning. Welcome to the program. Adam Sterling with you once again on CFAX 1070. This is Friday, October the 16th of the year 2020, and I reference one more week in terms of there being one more week in the BC election campaign. And, wow, things sure seemed to change fast over the last 24 hours, didn't they? There has been controversy that has been raised about various remarks and policy positions taken by one or more, I think it's fair to say, candidates within the BC Liberal Party. Yesterday, there were some fiery moments during a radio debate that was held in one of the big stations on the mainland between John Horgan, Andrew Wilkinson, and Sonia Fursanoux. Horgan, in a rather fiery exchange, accused Wilkinson of hiding under his bed while his candidates made remarks and took positions that were disintegrating the fabric of our society. Now, at the time, I saw a text report of that particular exchange back and forth. I had a chance to review the audio afterward, and I was trying to figure out, like, what the hell's Horgan doing here? Like, is he flying off the handle? Is he starting to lose it? Like what's going on? Because those are grave remarks to make, and I kind of had a feeling at that point. I went, I wonder if the NDP is planning to coincide this with the release of any damaging material right after the debate. And of course, it would appear at least they were.
Good evening. We start with more chaos in the BC Liberals' election campaign as the party's candidate in Chilliwack suddenly resigns over controversial comments.
The comments involve contraception, and they come just days after a Liberal in North Vancouver made sexist remarks.
CTV's Binder Sedgen reports on the latest campaign stumble for the Liberals over what their candidates are saying out loud.
Thanks, Brian.
During an all-candidates meeting, this video released by the NDP shows the Liberal candidate Lori Thronis commenting on free birth control.
It contains a whiff of the old eugenics thing where, poor people shouldn't have babies, and so we can't force them to have contraception, so we'll give it to them for free.
So this wasn't years ago. This wasn't, at a private party or a roast. This apparently was recently in a public venue. Okay, let's just keep listening.
Really disappointing to see that in 2020 we've got a politician who is so out of touch with not just the perspective of voters on this, but also the evidence.
Devin Black co-founded a group lobbying for universal access to free prescription contraception.
I think that the Liberal Party leadership should be very concerned that this is a person who is representing them and their party during an election.
Not anymore.
Those statements about contraception were completely wrong. I have therefore accepted Lori Thronis' resignation.
CTV called Thronis for comment.
Hi, you've reached Lori Thronis. I'm not available right now.
But didn't receive a response. The NDP have criticized Thronis for supporting a dangerous practice called conversion therapy to change people's sexual orientation. He's also appeared at anti-abortion rallies.
Mr. Thronis reached a point where his views are no longer compatible with mine or the party, and so he has voluntarily resigned.
The Liberal campaign at times chaotic. One candidate criticized for previously voting against a rainbow crosswalk. And just this week, video surfacing of another making sexist comments about an NDP MLA. Wednesday night, Thronis also responding to why he finds himself in hot water so often.
I want to be generous to everyone, to all British Columbians. I also want to make sure that my people are not left out. And so I will defend them as I see the need arise.
After one too many controversies, the Liberal leader deciding he could no longer defend Thronis. Binder Sudgen, CTV News, Victoria.
Okay. It is true that in politics, and I said this during the promo that we did a few moments ago, being in politics is a lot like playing football. You can't just take a football and walk out to the field to play football by yourself. You want to play football, you got to be on a team. Being on a team means you're going to learn to get along with people that you might not like, you might not agree with, but they're the best team or perhaps the only team you have available to you right now. You want to win an election. You want to win a game. You got to make sure your team is big enough. Small tent politics might be great if you want to be an activist and want to get attention and want to have other people eventually adopt your policy proposals and make them into reality. Hey, if that's what you want, that's great. Go join the Federal Green Party. If you want to win, if you want to actually be in the halls of power, You have to have a tent that is big enough and covers enough of the electorate to actually get enough people to back you and vote for you to win the damned election in the first place. And if a tent becomes so big as to encompass one or more voices that consistently set the damn thing on fire, trapping everyone inside as they watch their electoral prospects burst into a conflagration, then there's no point for that tent being that big in the first place, because it means everybody inside isn't going to win. They're going to lose because it's too big. The NDP was going to win this election anyways. I've said that since day one. I am highly confident that is more true now than it has been. And I'm still really unhappy with a lot of the things that the NDP has done. I also want to remark on the prospects of the BC Liberals winning this election. Were pretty much indistinguishable from zero to start with, and now they're basically at zero. You could argue there was no material change yesterday. However, I would argue it's always possible for things to get worse. But I think that now is a good time for those who find themselves in the right of center, free enterprise, non-NDP coalition that currently goes by the name the BC Liberal Party, which is composed of federal liberals, federal conservatives, as well as others with no distinct partisan affiliation, who believe that there needs to be an alternative and a foil to hold the NDP in check in this province, to take a hard look at what is palatable for the electorate, what is not palatable for the electorate, and also reflect on the fact that if the tent is so big as to include elements that burn the thing down, then there's no point in having the tent in the first place. It's not like this surprised anybody. I heard about this yesterday and I rolled my eyes and I said, of course. Of course, the loose cannon is loose again. Who could have possibly predicted this, or how could we possibly stop the same damn thing from happening again and again and again? If only there was something that could be done to disinclude somebody. But anyway, and you'll pardon my language, folks, today. This is why people don't vote. This is why people just stay home and say nobody can actually represent their views. And I don't really know what to tell you right now. Liberals didn't have great prospects before due to the way the election was called. They don't have great prospects now. In fact, I think the NDP is going to get really quiet really fast, because if the NDP does any more damage to the Liberal Party, it'll completely implode. And we might risk a situation where Sonia Firstenau becomes the next Rachel Notley, comes up the middle and sees the Greens become some sort of a force. Although I don't think there's time for that. The Greens don't have the operational capacity for that. Again, 6.5 days only with Sonia Firstenau as leader, and they don't have a full slate of candidates either. So I don't expect that to actually happen. But I expect the NDP to suddenly get pretty quiet, and they have actually gotten pretty quiet in the last 12 hours or so, because I think they realize how much damage has actually been done at this point, and all those votes are going to have to go somewhere. So BC's election has just entered a period of what I would call uncertainty, and I have no idea what's going to happen next in terms of there being a viable opposition for the BC Liberals or the BC Greens, or we might just see the NDP sweep the whole Legislative Assembly and there might just be a smattering of seats that are either red or green, and politics in this province will become internal party politics within the NDP itself, which, by the way, is just as bad as regular politics. The only difference is you don't see it and everybody has to pretend to be friends in public. But remember, being in politics is like playing football. You got to be on a team. Except football teams get along way better behind the scenes than any political party I've ever heard of. Quick break. We're back after this.
It's Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
So anyway, we got another week of who knows what to happen in the BC election that nobody wanted and we didn't need and will probably give us the or a very similar results to what we have now, except the NDP will have a majority. Greens may be in the legislature, may not be. BC Liberals may have a significant, perhaps, and I had thought in previous weeks, even substantial opposition, which is healthy and needed in any democracy. We've seen that in Ottawa as well. The opposition, while it is its job to sometimes be irritating, has brought to light matters of public importance that have resulted in significant changes to both government policy as well as the composition of the current cabinet with, well, don't need to get too far into all of that, but you all know what I'm talking about. In terms of people here in the Victoria area, though, I think that the issues that have animated many of the votes who have already cast those ballots because mail-in ballots can already be sent in, as well as advance voting was open as of yesterday, and we had a representative from Elections BC on to talk about that. I'm not really sure exactly to what degree this resignation may influence the results here in the Victoria area, because I think that much of the factors that will determine their outcome have already exerted that influence. And I think it's quite frankly too late to some degree. But hey, you know, we'll see when we see. I want to bring another voice into the conversation here. He, unlike me, has been here the last two Fridays as we have had helpful fill-in hosts, Alan Perry helping out. Mike Kozakowski, Citified.ca. Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, Adam. Nice to hear your voice. Nice to have you back in the studio. It felt different with Mr. Perry, but it was good times nonetheless.
He's a great guy. I love working with Alan. He knows all this stuff. He knows all the players in town. He's been doing this for years, so he's really good at what he does. I was comfortable leaving the show in his capable hands.
Yeah, no, it was great. It was wonderful. We had some great conversations, and I hope that you had the time to recharge your batteries, because now crazy times are about to happen, and we're a week away from you.
Yep.
And there could be fireworks next week. You know, Adam, I got to tell you, though, yeah. Here's the thing. I've never had as many people speak to me about essentially just nixing their ballot, ruining their ballot.
Yeah, me too.
And having it counted as a what's the term? What's the proper term?
A spoiled ballot is what they call it.
Spoiled ballot. That's it. Never, ever have I heard so many people speak about that, Adam. I guess the only way that one could assume that this has come to be is that the candidates were chosen in a bit of a rush. So you've got the NDP that had time to plan for this. The other parties scrambled, and so here we are.
Yeah, well, I think there's some carelessness on the part of the candidate yesterday. I think that while it's true that a team will protect any of its members to a certain degree, there's also an onus on people who are on the team to maybe not doom the prospects mm-hmm. of your teammates over and over mm-hmm. and over again. And, you know, I've been telling people that politics is fake, politics is engineered. You can believe something, but that doesn't mean you have to go spouting it all over the place all the time, knowing that it's creating huge headaches for all of your teammates and knowing that it's not actually going to influence policy anyway. But I digress. Yeah, I'm not really sure what's going to happen. I know there's some high-profile voices within the Liberal Party that have already spoken out saying that this sort of stuff was unacceptable as of weeks or months ago. They don't know why it was allowed to persist as long as it was. You know, they can sort out their own issues. My job is to be an observer. But, you know, this is why I sort of sigh from time to time. And I say, you know, all the parties are bad to some degree. And if anybody who's really comfortable about voting for a party and thinks it's perfect and thinks it's awesome and there are no people in it with any problematic views or who have done anything that's not favorable, it just means you haven't seen it. Because trust me, it's there. It's all parties to some degree. And that's just the way it is. You can call me cynical, but that's because I actually know how this stuff works. That's why I'm usually good at predicting what's going to happen. So I don't want to spend too much time on provincial politics with you today, Mike, because we did have some local news happen yesterday across the street at Victoria Council, didn't we?
We did. I'm shocked. I can't believe we had big news coming out of City Hall next door. What happened yesterday?
Well, there's a couple of different things. We're going to get into the showers issue, and it's really weird, Mike, because you will recall on the 23rd day of March, there were three outdoor sheltering tent cities, whatever you want to call them, announced by Victoria Mayor Lisa Helps. They were supposed to be at Royal Athletic Park, Beacon Hill Park, and Topaz Park. Weird things happen in the next little bit, and I don't fully understand why it was, but for whatever reason, Royal Athletic Park stayed virtually open and empty. In fact, they turned it into a nice summer camp after July for the entire summer, more than 6 months now, while all hell broke loose at Beacon Hill Park, and there were all those awful things that we have talked about. Central Park, things have been getting worse and worse and worse there. And Royal Athletic Park and the, you know, parking lot, my understanding, at 940 Caledonia has stayed underutilized at this time. You've got all that space, and there's just nothing going on there. And I'm thinking, why? Because we know that homeless folks need showers. That's something that I think we can all understand. Beacon Hill Park, originally in a planning document that was produced on the 18th day of March, before the announcements were even made, cautioned that Beacon Hill Park did not have adequate shower facilities. And yet, we've got showers at Royal Athletic Park. And as far as I can tell, they have never been made available to any homeless folks that might actually need them through this whole pandemic. So Beacon Hill Park had all that stuff happening. Central Park has had things getting worse and worse and worse. And we've got all this empty space, you know, just south and just east of Central Park in Royal Athletic Park. And it's been virtually untouched somehow. I was talking to somebody actually on social media yesterday who pointed out, and this is true, that the town of Sydney, Little Sydney, made showers open and available to the public, i.e. homeless people or anybody can go and use them if they want. And apparently that's been underway for the last 6 months. They asked a question. I think it's a great one. What took so long? How is it that Victoria somehow went 6 months without actually using the shower facilities that they had available or putting a shower trailer in that underutilized parking lot at 940 Caledonia? I don't get it, Mike.
No, no. And if we recall, it took a little bit of time for the shower trailer to be installed at the Tent City that materialized behind the courthouse. I'm not sure what the lag is here. It feels as though sometimes I think even the powers that be are tripping over their own feet as they address this issue. And we keep hearing divergent opinions on what's best and what's not going so well, what we can improve, what we should essentially forget and never repeat again. And it's been a bit of a mess. But like I said from the very beginning, Adam, we are going to make mistakes. We are going to trip over our feet, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. But it did come as a bit of a shock that we did not have shower facilities to begin with. It was that actually took me aback, realizing that was the case.
Yeah, no, it's just, it's sort of odd because it's one of the things we're supposed to have. And, you know, they're sitting right there at Royal Athletic Park, and yet that was empty or turned into a nice, beautiful summer camp all at the same time, just a few kilometers south of there in Beacon Hill Park. Well, we don't even need to get into all the weirdness that was happening there over the summer. So we'll continue to follow that story. My understanding is that it's going to be coming back to council. I actually do have some clips to remind everybody if we want to listen to those. This was on March 23rd.
So the Tent City that was on the courthouse lawn was set up organically. What we're doing is the opposite. BC Housing Bylaw, the Coalition to End Homelessness, the Dandelion Society are working together to put structures in place to make sure that there's that there's order, that there are washrooms, that there's health supports. Royal Athletic Park was chosen in part because it's a controlled facility. People can come and go as if they were going to a baseball game from one central location. That will be a staff facility. BC Housing is currently looking for an operator, so it will be as if it's an indoor shelter, but it's outdoor. What we imagine is the people with the greatest health needs will be moved to Royal Athletic Park. The people who have less health needs, mental health and addictions challenges will be moving to Topaz and Beacon Hill.
So hold on. So Royal Athletic Park was supposed to be where the folks with the biggest challenges went. That was going to be where there would be the most potential disorder with staff and security and all that. And those who went to Topaz or Beacon Hill supposedly had less needs. And that's not what happened, of course. Royal Athletic Park never did get used. We'll get to that in a sec. But just to remind ourselves.
What we want to make sure is the people who have the most acute needs, people with substance use issues, mental health challenges, all of those really acute issues will be the supports for them will be at Royal Athletic Park. And again, it's going to take a little while to get that facility set up, so we imagine that those people will stay where they are now, which is on the 900 block of Pandora, until the Royal Athletic Park is set up. But yes, all of the sites will have appropriate security measures in place. And again, the people who have the greatest need will be at Royal Athletic Park with not only security, because we know security is not the same thing as healthcare. They'll be there with supports provided by Island Health and BC Housing to make sure that they get the care and attention that they need.
See, that was the way it was originally announced, Mike. And yet, 16 days later, on April 8th,
all right, I have an update here from BC Housing and Island Health, and I know there's been much discussion about the people who are currently living outside in this health pandemic. So in collaboration with the City of Victoria, BC Housing and Island Health, a distributed temporary sheltering model will be implemented in Victoria and the CRD to meet the current COVID-19 health crisis. This model will prioritize temporary indoor sheltering across a variety of sites consistent with the province's direction to provide safe spaces to self-isolate and enable social distancing. This means that as of today, the Royal Athletic Park is no longer deemed acceptable as a sheltering space.
She went on to explain, and we will get more after the news break, Mike, but I do need to take a break for that news break, and I'd like your thoughts as well. Yeah, it's kind of weird. I had somebody tell me in July, Adam, why is it that we were originally going to have the people with the greatest needs and the need for security and all that at Royal Athletic Park. And, you know, folks in Beacon Hill would be the ones who won't cause problems. And yet Royal Athletic Park never gets used, so the folks with all the problems ended up in Beacon Hill Park, and then all hell broke loose. And I thought, yeah, that is kind of weird. As long as the folks stay in Beacon Hill, they're not in Royal Athletic or anywhere else, are they? Anyway, more on that after this.
Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
I had somebody back in July say, you know what, Adam? As long as everybody's keeping the campers in Beacon Hill Park and maybe downplaying concerns, even though there was a labor dispute later on in the month, it was very serious. As long as they're still in Beacon Hill Park, they're not going to other parks, are they? Royal Athletic Park's looking really empty, really idyllic. They were doing summer camps there. It was beautiful. I had a couple of people saying, Adam, you should ask why that is. You should ask why that is. I said, well, you know, I got a lot to do. We'll certainly put it on the list. But if we go back in time, on March 23rd, Royal Athletic Park was supposed to be where the most seriously disadvantaged, I think is a fair word, individuals were supposed to be staying.
So the tent city that was on the courthouse lawn was set up organically. What we're doing is the opposite. BC Housing Bylaw, the Coalition to End Homelessness, the Dandelion Society are working together to put structures in place to make sure that there's that there's order, that there are washrooms, that there's health supports. Royal Athletic Park was chosen in part because it's a controlled facility. People can come and go as if they were going to a baseball game from one central location. That will be a staffed facility. BC Housing is currently looking for an operator, so it will be as if it's an indoor shelter, but it's outdoor. What we imagine is the people with the greatest health needs will be moved to Royal Athletic Park. The people who have less health needs, mental health and addictions challenges will be moving to Topaz and Beacon Hill.
Of course, Royal Athletic Park never did open to sheltering, so those with the greatest needs went to Beacon Hill and Topaz. We know how that went. She also said,
What we want to make sure is the people who have the most acute needs, people with substance use issues, mental health challenges, all of those really acute issues will be, the supports for them will be at Royal Athletic Park. And again, it's going to take a little while to get that facility set up. So
that was more than 6 months ago. 16 days later, on April the 8th, Royal Athletic Park was suddenly off the table.
All right. I have an update here from BC Housing and Island Health, and I know there's been much discussion about the people who are currently living outside in this health pandemic. So in collaboration with the City of Victoria, BC Housing and Island Health, a distributed temporary sheltering model will be implemented in Victoria and the CRD to meet the current COVID-19 health crisis. This model will prioritize temporary indoor sheltering across a variety of sites consistent with the province's direction to provide safe spaces to self-isolate and enable social distancing. This means that as of today, the Royal Athletic Park is no longer deemed acceptable as a sheltering space. The indoor sites will also provide supports such as washrooms, hygiene, and social and healthcare supports as required, including harm reduction. As I've said, with a focus on indoor spaces, Island Health has advised that Royal Athletic Park is no longer required as part of the coordinated action plan to support the vulnerable population in the CRD.
What ended up happening is they bought the hotels, and we know how that's gone. How many Vic PD calls has there been to the former Comfort Inn, 3,000 block of Blanchard? How many Vic PD calls have we had to Paul's Motor Inn, that iconic and very gruesome image that many of you saw on your television screens in the evening of a man suffering from multiple stab wounds crawling across Douglas Street from the bus stop into traffic? He's crawling towards Paul's Motor Inn. You just don't see it. It's not in frame in that photograph. We know that there were substantial needs there. And of course, folks ended up in Beacon Hill Park, the incident that happened on Tuesday, July 21st at 1:30 p.m., leading to a labor dispute with members of CUPE Local 50. And Royal Athletic Park stayed empty the whole time. They were doing summer camps and fun activities there. The showers stayed unused. My understanding is the parking lot at 940 Caledonia still not fully utilized. Finally, as we get to today, we are told that shower facilities will actually be coming.
Talk to our audience about the proposal about the shower facilities at Royal Athletic Park. Just dive into that as to, you know, what's been proposed in your world, what should be happening.
Well, I take a shower every morning, and it's a very, you know, it's great, and I can't imagine not having access to a shower for weeks or even months at a time. I mean, that just seems really inhumane. And so people who are living outside, there are some shower facilities at our place, but they're not enough to accommodate everyone. And so we've got the Royal Athletic Park sitting there relatively empty. There are some community use hours, and there's also the parking lot next door, which isn't seeing full parking where a shower trailer could be pulled in. So council gave authorization to staff to explore options for providing showers. It's just as basic and simple as that.
All right. Cost of that, do we know?
We don't know. That'll come back to council with an estimate. We did receive funding through Emergency Management BC for showers earlier in the year at Topaz Park, and we're still in a provincial state of emergency, so there may be some cost recovery from the province. There may also be some federal funding that could be used.
Okay.
So,
So staff is going to go forward and look at that, Mike Kozakowski. We, of course, had a disturbing news story break this morning. Vic PD looking for a suspect after what they call an assault with a weapon that has the potential to be life-altering. When I hear that, I think of someone having defensive wounds, getting their hands cut to ribbons because somebody's trying to kill them with a knife or slash at them. I don't know if that's what happened. I just recall similar descriptions being made to other incidents that proved to be of that nature. And that was at Central Park. Central Park's got, what, 117 tents in it right now, overflowing. Royal Athletic Park and that parking lot, totally empty. It seems to me that things are not being evenly proportioned across neighborhoods in the city right now, and they should be.
No, it certainly is that case. And you also have to take into consideration the usage for Royal Athletic was such that if you were to, from a political point of view, if you were to disturb the usage that had gone on over the summer, that would be a very difficult situation to manage in terms of optics. So the community there somehow, however this all went down, was successful in having the facility not open and operate, and then they were successful in introducing a variety of uses that took precedence in that park. And it's only now the weather is turning that we're starting to see council look again at that facility. But I'm actually, Adam, for whatever reason, I assumed that there were shower facilities of some kind available to the homeless population. I was taken aback, like I said, that there wasn't. And for some reason, I can't believe that I assumed wrongly or either believed otherwise or perhaps misheard, but the fact that we're talking about showers as a necessity today, despite the fact they haven't been provided for many months, especially over the summer months, it just seems it's quite shocking to me.
Well, that was why the campers blocked the Johnson Street Bridge a few weeks ago. At least they said that they just wanted shower facilities. And we were warned that there were no facilities in Beacon Hill. They wanted shower facilities. Somebody actually brought that to my attention when this announcement was made yesterday. And I think that was sort of bringing to our attention the fact that we've had these shower facilities. They've been sitting idle for the entire summer. Apparently, there is a shower trailer or one can be procured. And there's a spot right there, apparently, in that empty parking lot. And for whatever reason, it just wasn't utilized.
Yeah, you're right. And that protest itself, it wasn't very long-lived, was it?
No.
It materialized and then it fizzled out. So it never got as much media attention as other protests have. And my understanding was at the time, even the protesters themselves, there was some infighting between different groups and there was some negative messaging that came out from the protesters themselves towards each other for a point there. So it was a bit of a different protest than we normally have seen, especially the fact that it was so short-lived. But you're right, Adam, they did raise that point. This is very interesting. It takes us back, perhaps, to the issue of how some parks in the city of Victoria were never permitted to be camping parks to begin with.
Yeah.
And many people wonder, why is that? Why were they chosen not to be? So anyways, behind-the-scenes politics, let's put it that way.
Well, and I've heard some people raise those concerns. I had somebody tell me that back in July. But, you know, who knows? Everybody's always saying things in this town. You don't know what's true. You don't know what's not true. Everything needs to be verified, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I have a texter here reminding me that Royal Athletic Park is very close to Central Park. What I am saying when I talk about concentration is that right now Central Park's bursting at the seams, folks. We have, 117 tents and rising? That's way too many people crammed into way too small of a space.
Yeah.
The new city bylaw only provides for, I think it's 21 spaces in Central Park in a way that is actually safe. All those tents are going to need to go somewhere. And if they've got empty space where there can be appropriate distancing and other provisioning close by, you would think that that would at least have been on the agenda for the municipal government sooner than this. But for whatever reason, it isn't. So we'll watch as this goes forward. Staff, I believe, will be coming back with options for council to consider next week. And I also wanted to get your thoughts on another thing, Mike, because Council touched on a very contentious issue yesterday, again, and that was the mural in Bastion Square. The ACAB, right. All cops are best. And well, I've heard it described either way. Some people think it means all cops are bad. My understanding has always been that the term means all cops are best, and it's the term that we use for a child born out of wedlock.
Yeah.
That issue came up yesterday, and a motion was adopted by council, but there was no actual firm date for when those letters would be removed. I want your thoughts on that, but we should probably take a quick break first. Anything else you want to leave on the shower issue and the camping issue for now?
Yes, very quickly. I believe there may even be a protest planned for later today.
There is, actually. The humans of Beacon Hill Park have been talking about it on their Twitter account. It's actually really weird. For the last few days, they changed their name. They were calling themselves the Refugees of Beacon Hill Park. You may recall one or more elected officials likening tent cities to refugee camps within Canada over the past few months. So maybe that's where the campers got the idea to call themselves Refugees. They have since changed their name back, I should say, by the way. And I think they're doing some sort of a march that will involve Central Park, City Hall, the BC Legislature, and then back to Beacon Hill Park. And I think that's later on today, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, that's my understanding as well. So really interesting to see what happens with that.
All right. We'll take a quick break. We'll watch that. And ACAB, four letters and way more than 4 weeks of headaches now. We've been trying to deal with this. What actually happened yesterday? Oh, and Ben Isett found another statue that he suggested may need to be removed. Didn't go the way he thought it would, though. Find out after this.
You're listening to Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
All right. They got into it yesterday with the mural in Bastion Square. Mike Kosakowski from Citify.ca as we continue discussing the local issues of the week. And we're going to get to open lines actually coming up right after the 10 o'clock hour. So folks can jump on the queue right now if they want to get in. We're going to be talking open lines up until 10:30. Then what do I have on my schedule here? I normally have it all memorized. Then we're doing open lines for most of the next hour by the looks of it. So there's lots of time for everybody to get their call in at 250-386-1161. Professor Ron Cheffin's not joining us today. We look forward to having him back in a week. Jeff Bray, Executive Director, Downtown Victoria Business Association, though, will be joining us talking about the plastic bag ban issue. Apparently, it is going to be going forward. At least now it'll be in conjunction with provincial law, which is always the way it should have been done. Want to talk to you about the mural, though, Mike. Let's listen to some of what was said yesterday in council. Councillor Charlene Thornton-Joe, who herself, I think, has done great work calling out racism and discrimination where it exists, but also being mindful that it's possible to be counterproductive when we turn things into an us versus them situation, like when we seek to paint all police officers with the same negative brush.
The part that motivated me to do this is, and I can only speak personally, because the letters in the mural, for me, goes against what I believe and what I've always stood strong for. And I felt that I could no longer stay silent with those letters there. I've always said, and I think council members would know, that I interrupt councillors at times when I feel that they are discriminating in some way, because I don't believe that we should be able to pick and choose what is okay to discriminate and what is not okay to discriminate.
And I like the way that she does it, Mike, because she believes that racism, discrimination, sexism, all those things are wrong. It's also important that we not paint any one group with exactly the same brush. And she went on to say that she would also oppose a mural that said all politicians are best, you know, the rest of the word that I don't think I can say on the radio. So I like the consistency that the councillor has, and I like how she recognizes that it's possible, even with good intentions, to further inflame the situation, make it more divisive, and make it worse. Jeff Young jumped in and said, actually, we have rules about whether public art is offensive.
I believe we have standards and principles for public art, and they include various constraints on what is and what is not appropriate for art within the city. I had thought I'd seen those in some of the background material or even within the contract.
And there was a letter, apparently, my understanding is, that did reference certain standards being met around things being offensive. Mayor Helps acknowledging that it's a tightrope they're trying to walk.
And I think this motion is a little bit of a tightrope walk as well, because one of the things that I think may come out of this, in the same way that we removed the statue of Johnny McDonald but then put a plaque there explaining what it meant, is that there may be some, you know, if this passes, these letters can be painted over, but not with a complete erasure of what do these letters mean.
So sort of like the situation with Sir Johnny McDonald. At this point, I found it odd because I didn't see Councillor Potts or Isaac there at the meeting yesterday. I'm thinking they would surely have a stake in this and have something to say because they've been vocal about it to some degree in the past. It turns out that they could join remotely now, and I guess one of them did from a roadside.
So I apologize if I missed this at the beginning.
That's Sarah Potts. Here is what happened when they actually joined.
Does anyone else want to speak? Yeah, Councillor Dubeau.
Mayor Helps.
And if I could be added to the list.
You betcha. Councillor Dubeau, Councillor Potts, Councillor Isaac.
Councillor Dubeau did a great job reading a letter from a local imam talking about how these letters, regardless of what their intent was, may be counterproductive to what they call the efforts for promoting anti-racism, because they're likely to start a fight. They're likely to divide the community in a way that is not necessary and not required. And I was glad that he read that into the record. I want to, let's see, I'm going to play this clip here. Then Sarah Potts joined.
So I apologize if I missed this at the beginning of this discussion, but reading the motion, it does seem like this is the work that staff is already doing. And I'm wondering, with that in mind, if they're, what the need is to go forward with this motion. It's my understanding that dialogues are taking place and the work is and has been.
And there is talks, or are talks, I should say, our understanding is underway. She also pointed out the imbalance of concern here, that at the end of the day, in Councillor Sarah Potts' view, one side is concerned about some letters hurting feelings, the other side is concerned about much graver issues.
To say that the acronym needs to be taken out to have a collegial conversation really belies the enormous power imbalance in this discussion. We have some folks who are talking about issues of racism, of violence, and even murder, and the other side is talking about some letters in a mural. And I
goes on to say that she wants to recognize that. Then enters Ben. Ben Isaac comes into the conversation and immediately extends the precedent that it might set to encompass other public works of art that he's been apparently keeping tabs on.
Looking at some other works of public art in the city that I also know are offensive to different individuals and groups, I'm just wondering how we would evaluate whether alterations are required to those works of public art.
Hear that? If the letters go off the mural, other public artworks are going to get it. They then ask, well, what do you mean? What public art are you talking about?
An example would be a statue on Government Street in the vicinity of the Inner Harbor Causeway of Captain James Cook. And that individual was notorious in terms of the harmful impact of his exploits on Indigenous people, to the point where he was killed by the Indigenous people of the Hawaiian Islands for violence that him and his crew members committed against the leaders of the Hawaiian Islanders.
Did you know that, Mike, that the statue of Sir James Cook actually came up as an issue of offensive public art yesterday? I hadn't seen that reported anywhere.
No, that came out of nowhere.
You know why? Because it didn't actually go anywhere. Listen to the exchange that happened next.
So what process would be appropriate to remove that offensive work of public art from the public realm?
Staff begins contemplating.
Ms. Moore.
Through the mayor, that sculpture is not in our collection. It is actually with the Greater Victoria Harbour Authority.
And there's silence.
And as I understand from staff who are communicating with me right now, there is a commemoration policy forthcoming as part of Create Victoria.
More silence.
Okay, so that plinth on which the statue is mounted is basically just on the Harbour Authority's side and just out of the Government Street right-of-way?
That's correct.
More silence.
Okay. Well, that's useful information to have. So.
Yes, it is useful information to have, Mike. Statue lives another day. It turns out it was never actually under the control of the city of Victoria. What do you think?
No, there's enough spaces between the exchanges there. It was like a moon landing conversation between NASA control and the astronauts thousands of miles away. Adam, I do want to say, though, that the issue about the letters, is it not like the conversation that we had about the statue being removed in the first place? I'm talking about the John A. McDonald statue.
It's similar.
And we have the conversation. So yeah. If we can remove one piece of art and then have the conversation, then I don't see why we can't remove another piece of art's more divisive aspect and then also have the conversation. But first and foremost, as anybody who deals with the city of Victoria or any municipality or any government for that matter, if you enter into a contractual obligation, you're bound by that contract to carry through with the work as you have proposed it. If there are any alterations whatsoever, you cannot just willy-nilly say, well, I'd prefer to have this change. That needs to go through a formal process. And most times you're going to have to undo the work that you took that wasn't permitted. We can't be setting precedents by saying that you supply one piece of art and then deliver another one. That just doesn't work that way. That creates chaos. And Councillor Young was right that we do have terms. We do have conditions that we set forth when it comes to public art for good reason. Now, walking that back doesn't make sense because, as I said, that would create chaos. So the precedent we cannot set. We already have an example of art being removed and then a conversation happening. So the reason why we can't do that again, I find to be relatively weak. And if the community decides that the ACAB acronym should remain, well, that should be a community decision and not one that, for the time being at least, appears to be a backdoor discussion between the parties. I don't think that's quite right.
Council has chosen for this issue to come back next week.
Thank you, Councillor Dubois. I'm going to go back to Councillor Thornton-Joe in a moment, but we really are in a bit of a procedural loop. Councillor Dubois made a good point. If this amendment fails, the whole thing comes back to us next week anyway. I mean, Councillor Thornton-Joe, you know, I know you said you wanted to move it ahead to today, but I don't know that that's good or necessary. So anyways, just if we could kind of clean up our process here a little bit. If we defeat the amendment,
it got complicated, Mike. Long story short, they're not going to actually remove the letters today, but they have voted to remove the letters at the earliest possible opportunity. The debate is over what the words earliest possible opportunity mean. So we'll have to leave it there. We got 45 seconds left. Final thoughts for today?
Yes. Anybody who is choosing to vote in this election, and I encourage everybody to exercise the democratic right to do so. Importantly, though, if you choose to vote by mail, ensure that you read the instructions. Ensure that your ballot is not a wasted ballot if you don't intend it to be that way. There have been ballots returned, as we've seen in other jurisdictions, that were improperly filled out, which means that they cannot be counted. Don't let your voice not be counted, and please ensure you read the instructions. It's simple. It's just a matter of following procedure, but some people, especially when they're faced with doing it for the first time, may not realize that they've made a mistake or are underway into making a mistake. So read the instructions, ensure you know what you're doing. If you have any questions, there are professionals at BC Elections or Elections BC that will assist you.
Absolutely. Everybody should vote. I don't care who you vote for, but you should vote. Mike Kozakowski, citify.ca. Appreciate your time as always.
Thank you, sir, so much. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. Bye now. All right, folks. Open lines coming up. 250-386-1161 *1070. You can weigh in on anything that we've discussed on the show recently. Calvin, you'll be first up after the news.